Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. We're still finding out more about the killer in Chattanooga, the man who shot four Marines and a police officer and wounded another. I still want to know how he got his gun. Now, it does appear that he would have passed background checks because He didn't have a criminal record, apart from he was to appear in court on a drunk driving charge. Wonder if that gets you on the background check. Probably not. The real question is why he had an assault rifle, an assault weapon. I believe it was an AR-15. I'm still not sure what the gun was that he used, but it definitely was some kind of high-powered semi-automatic weapon. And I know that people who love shooting really, really want these guns. Because they're fun, I've heard, to bring to target ranges and so forth. I know they're not useful for self-defense. If you've got 100 people out to get you, you're probably the bad guy. I'm not too worried about it. But the real question is why non-military, non-police officer, non-security guard, ordinary citizens should be able to have access to this kind of military weaponry. You know what? I'll make you a deal. You want to shoot up at gun ranges? Then tell you what. Go to the gun range, shoot it up, and then go home. Leave the gun there. Maybe we could come to some arrangement for that. But I know you don't need them for hunting. You don't need to riddle your venison with 100 bullets. And if you can't shoot a deer in the first 20 times trying, you know, you probably should let the deer go. I'll tell you this, all these people attacking gun-free zones, you know what? You want to arm the military inside a military recruitment center, I'm fine with it. That doesn't bother me. I guess we need security guards there. I would actually make the people who want AR-15s legal pay for the lives lost. Since you really want to have your fun at the gun range and you realize the number of people will die for it, the least you could do is pay their funeral costs. Just put a tax, the gun tax, on these semi-automatic weapons. We'll call it the pay for lives lost tax. And, you know, to every gun you buy because you want to really have fun shooting up things, you'll just add another $500 to pay for the funeral costs of all the people who are less responsible and kill with it. I don't claim to have any easy answers here. I do know that this really needs to stop. And I don't think the answer is to make every single other person on the planet wear armor-plated underwear and require every 5-year-old to carry a gun. I don't think that would stop the shooting. I think that military weapons should be left to the military. Leave it to the Marines inside to be armed, not to the terrorist outside to be armed. If you want to talk about that, feel free to call in 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. I want to move on a little bit, though it's still just, I mean, I don't, part of me just wonders, are we just going to do a show every day? Some people are like, well, what about all the killing in the inner city? Well, you know what? What about it? What about it? That's awful as well. And I really think that if automatic, semi-automatic weaponry were not available, there'd be a lot less deaths. I mean, we've banned fully automatic machine guns since the 1930s. I don't hear too many people complaining about that. Why can't we leave military weapons to the military? You know, maybe if you'd had some training, maybe if we required gun owners to undergo substantial training, a year of training, including psychological tests before they own a semi-automatic weapon, maybe we could have found out this guy was a killer. I don't know. He seems to have been a guy who grew up in America of Palestinian and Kuwaiti heritage, who went to the Middle East and probably was radicalized there a year or two before he started shooting. Anyway, toll-free number is 888-48-MARK. I want to move on. If you want to talk about that, that's fine, but I want to move on and talk a little bit about Scott Walker. Because I think there's this idea that he seems so nice. He seems like a dork. He kind of smiles a little bit. I've talked a lot about Jeb Bush, the front runner. I've talked a lot about Donald Trump, number two. Let's talk about Scott Walker, who's probably currently number three. See, Donald Trump isn't the only cruel Republican. The mean things and awful things he said about Mexicans are just wrong and also racist. Okay, and Chris Christie isn't the only mean guy. He's the only guy to respond to legitimate criticisms by basically being an ass. Now, Scott Walker, who seems so nice, has his own really horrible stuff. It's just that people don't talk about a lot in the air. So today I want to give you the inside scoop on Scott Walker. Scott Walker, most of you know, was the, or maybe still is, I think, the current governor of Wisconsin. He came into national fame a few years back when he decided to prevent employees, public employees in Wisconsin, from trying to get higher wages through collective bargaining. He seems to believe that you don't have a you have a free speech right to assemble, and you have a free speech right to petition your government for grievances, and you have a free speech right to talk to your employer, but you just can't do all three together. You just can't combine with your fellow employees and try to get higher wages. And then we wonder, with his attack on unions, why it is that workers' wages go down year after year after year. Anyway, that's how Scott Walker came to fame. That's how we most know him. But there's some other things he's done that you may not know about. Recently, to the credit of the United States Boy Scouts, they finally lifted their ban on having gay and, well, I should say, I guess it's gay because there are no lesbians head of the Boy Scouts. It's still only male. But gay and, I guess, bisexual troop leaders. Now, this has been a ban that had been in place for a very, very long time. This is an organization founded by an avowed racist. They gave up its racist past, but didn't give up its homophobic past until, well, this month. In fact, it's not quite done yet. There's been a recommendation by its committee, and then the full board has to vote, I think, on July 27th. But they are expected to finally lift the ban. I remember this case coming up in the 1990s when I worked in Los Angeles as a lawyer. And the Boy Scouts were defending their right to discriminate. Case went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court said, you know what? You do have a right as a private organization to discriminate. It may be an awful, terrible thing to do, but hey, you're a private organization. You want to discriminate, you can. The Ku Klux Klan does not have to allow black members. The Boy Scouts do not have to allow gay members. But a funny thing happened. Once the Boy Scouts started being put in the same category as the Ku Klux Klan, fewer people wanted to associate with the Boy Scouts. Rather than legally shutting them down, people began the much more onerous and yet far more successful process of socially shutting them down. Frankly, it's the same way we've managed to decrease tobacco use in the United States. Social stigma. That's right. Pick on your friends who smoke, and you should, because it'll save their lives if they quit. I fully support social ostracism of smokers. Make them stand outside in the rain. I'm all for that. They're not smoking in my house. Well, the same is true with bigots. It turns out that when you ostracize bigots, people become less bigoted. It turns out that even though the vast majority of white Southerners supported segregation, supported Jim Crow laws in the 1960s, Social ostracism has turned that on its head, until even South Carolina took down its Confederate flag this month. Pretty amazing, really. Sure, we've got wacko, dangerous bigots out there, terrorists like the guy that shot up the Charleston church. But they are a minority now, and that's a good thing. And that wasn't done through the law. That was done through social ostracism. Well, the Boy Scouts suffered the same social penalty. City after city stopped associating with them. People stopped giving private organizations them place. I mean, the Boy Scouts have always relied on the kindness of the community. They were always seen as a bunch of, listen, I remember the Boy Scouts. These are just kids, and they're making fires and tying knots and learning about the wilderness and collecting merit badges. It seems very, very sweet, innocent, and nice. And it's a great way for boys to socialize, and it's all good in a productive way. All very good until you find out, well, they're homophobic. And then parents started taking their kids out of the Scouts and started encouraging their local governments not to deal with the Scouts, not to give them the free facilities that the Scouts had relied on for decades. And the social ostracism worked. And in fact, the Boy Scouts didn't say that they're ending their policy because they finally realized that it was bigoted and wrong. They said they're ending their policy precisely because of things like lawsuits. Although really they'd won the lawsuit. It wasn't the lawsuits. It was more they couldn't get the free stuff from local organizations and from parents groups and from neighborhood groups that used to give them all kinds of things until they found out they were homophobic. So, all right, they were forced to conform with the times. I'm glad. They caved. And they were right to cave, and it should have happened a decade ago, but okay, it happened. What's interesting, and what the way this relates to Scott Walker, is what Scott Walker said about the Boy Scouts. He talked about why he supported the original policy. And what he said is, the original policy protected children. Here's the quote. I was an Eagle Scout, lifelong member of the Scouts, and my wife was a den mother, lifelong commitment. I supported the previous membership policy because it protected children. Protected children. Not allowing gay leadership protected children. How did that protect children? If you have a gay teacher or a gay scout leader, that makes a kid gay? Does it imply that gay people are all child molesters? Is that what you want to imply, Scott Walker? Imagine if he said, yeah, I support the policy banning blacks from being teachers because it protects children. Banning Jews from being teachers because it protects children. Banning Irish from being teachers because it protects scout leaders because it protects children. Banning Latinos from being scout leaders because it protects children. Heck, banning left-handed people from being scout leaders because it protects children. Think about the implications of what he says. He's implying that all gay people are harmful to children. Now, when did Scott Walker say this? Was it 20 years ago? No, he said it last week. And this guy's a front runner in the Republican nomination. Why aren't these things being discussed? When I come back, I want to tell you about some other cruel things that Scott Walker supports, because he's not a nice guy, even if he seems like he's one. Toll free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar, and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Talking, if you want, about the Chattanooga shooting, though, it's really hard to talk about. And also about Scott Walker. By the way, Scott Walker isn't the only Republican running for president who has suggested that all gay people are child molesters. Mike Huckabee did the same. So that seems to be a common theme. Donald Trump hates Mexicans. Scott Walker and Mike Huckabee hate gay people. The feelings about black people tends to be more understated these days. I mean, there was a time when George H.W. Bush ran an ad against Mike Dukakis, the Willie Horton ad that seemed to have a nice dark racist element. But, this intolerance is very much crucial to the Republican brand. It's interesting because Jeb Bush, in some ways, is reacting against it. And I guess I have to give him credit for separating himself from the rest. Jeb Bush came out saying that he supports non-discrimination against gay and lesbian people. That's actually pretty forward of him. He thinks it should be done at the state level, not the federal level, which suggests that, well, okay, Mr. Wannabe President, why wouldn't you want it nationwide? Imagine if we had Civil Rights Act at the state level, not the federal level. Well, we'd have civil rights in New York and Vermont and California, and we just wouldn't have it in Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina. So you can see why the state's rights may not be the right way to deal with it. But hey, he's better than Scott Walker, better than Mike Huckabee. And after the break, I'll tell you more about Scott Walker, particularly about his plan to make welfare recipients take drug tests and why that's a really, really bad idea. But first, let me get to your calls, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Reggie from Georgia, on line 5. How are you, sir?
How you doing, Mark Levine? Happy Friday to you, too.
Happy Friday to you. Sorry I couldn't get to you yesterday. Just had too many callers and had to get to the first ones first. But what do you have to say?
Well, I got to say is that I heard Scott Walker being interviewed by a conservative radio talk show host who believe everything he said about about everything else. Like, how is presidency going to be different from the others and all of that stuff? How is his presidency going to be different? What he would change about the Obama administration if he were ever president? What laws would he change? Executive orders that he would change? Whatever he would change about the Obama administration, he would do it. And how he would handle terrorism and the border situation.
And what was the bottom line? I mean, what I'm going to talk about in the next half hour is his plan to really, really make poor people suffer. I mean, one of the main things when you get to Republicans is, they don't much like Latinos, they don't much like blacks, they don't much like gay people, they don't really respect women's rights. Okay, we expect those things. But the people they hate most of all, beyond all of those, is poor people. There's no one Republicans hate more than people who don't have any money, which is ironic because a lot of working-class white people continue to support the Republican Party. But they're the ones they're mostly going to go after. I'll tell you why after the break. Reggie, stay on if you want. Folks, if you want to join us, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine. Call me, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Follow me on Twitter, at Mark Levine Talk. Check out my website, marklevinetalk.com. Talking about Scott Walker, because he seems like a nice guy. He's got this sort of baby face, and he's relatively young, and he doesn't ooze fire. He doesn't throw his meanness around the way Chris Christie clearly does. He doesn't relish in being a jerk. But that doesn't mean he's a nice guy. He's actually one of the cruelest Republicans out there. Let's look at his proposal in Wisconsin to drug test all food stamp recipients. The Wisconsin legislature sent him a bill saying that the state could test food stamp recipients if it had a reasonable suspicion they were on drugs. Scott Walker crossed out the words reasonable suspicion with his line item veto and basically allows Wisconsin to drug test all food stamp recipients. Now let's talk about what this means, because there's a sort of a feel-good aspect for it for conservatives who really, really hate poor people. It's like, we know you're on food stamps. We know you're starving. We know that $4 to $5 to maybe $6 in some states a day will help you prevent starvation. And we really want you to hate yourself for it. Here's the thing about it. Studies have consistently shown that welfare recipients use drugs far lower rates than the general population. Did you know that? People who are starving rarely can afford to buy drugs. I guess it makes sense. So they use it much less. Studies also show that the cost of testing the welfare recipients is far greater than the food stamps themselves. In other words, we could double the amount of food intake of our poorest people, or we can make them go through something really humiliating like urinating in a jar and submitting it to federal inspection. Well, Scott Walker wants to do the latter. And I want you to think about why. Why it's so important to humiliate, not just the ones that someone has a reasonable suspicion are on drugs, but every single food stamp recipient in Wisconsin. Why do we humiliate the poor? Well, the purpose really is to make people hate any kind of government aid, to make them avoid seeking food stamps, to make them, lead a life of crime or sell drugs or do other ways to make money when you're dirt poor and can't find a job, but don't seek help from the government. Here's the thing. People get help from the government all the time. Maybe we should test Social Security recipients or Medicaid recipients or Medicare recipients. Make them undergo a drug test. Maybe if you get the mortgage interest deduction on your house, maybe you should undergo a drug test. Maybe if you seek a passport from the government, give them a drug test. What is the logical connection between food stamps and drug tests? You can understand a logical connection between airline pilots, bus drivers, people behind the nuclear facilities that make nuclear energy. Yeah, I want to drug test them because if they make a mistake because they're high, a bunch of people's lives could be lost. That makes sense. But drug testing someone in order to let them eat? What is the goal of that? What is the goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Let's say they fail the drug test. Now we will starve them? Okay. I mean, it makes a lot more sense for the mortgage interest deduction, right? We're saving tens of thousands of dollars sometimes, at least thousands of dollars, for people on their taxes, rather than $4 to $6 a day to eat. Maybe if you're high, you shouldn't get a mortgage interest deduction. Maybe if you're high, you shouldn't get your Medicare. I don't know. Maybe if you're high, you shouldn't be able to go into a national park. You could make a logical argument for that. But really, the heart of the proposal, it's just to be mean. That's the point. The point is the Republican Party has contempt for poor people, and they want to express it. They want you to be humiliated if you're poor. It's not enough that you're struggling to eat. It's not enough that you're struggling to get a home. I assume they would, particularly the homeless, would be the most ones who were urinating in a cup. Heck, they'd have a place to go to the bathroom. Might be a step up for a few. What's the point? Does he not understand that being dirt poor is humiliation enough? That having to seek food stamps is humiliation enough? Why do conservatives have so much contempt for poor people? And is it racist? Is it that the image of a poor person in a conservative's mind is always a black person? It must be because plenty of poor white people continue to vote for the Republican Party. Now, the poorest of the poor don't tend to. But working class people, lower middle class people, the kind, frankly, who could probably use some food stamps or health care or the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. They're the ones sometimes that are most likely to vote for them. So I have a message for you. If you want to vote for Scott Walker, you're just mean. You hate teachers. You hate police officers. You hate firefighters. You don't think they deserve a decent wage. You don't think people deserve health care. You don't think poor people deserve to eat. You think that humiliation is the right way to go. If you support people like Scott Walker, you're just mean. And he may look like a nice guy, but he's not. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Reggie has been holding on all this time. How are you doing, Reggie? We got more time now.
Like I said, he was being interviewed by a radio talk show over an hour ago, and who believed everything he said about what he's going to do with the government if he ever got in the White House and became president?
Right.
He was going to do all the things. He was going to turn around all the things that the president has accomplished. Said it's the Iranian nuclear treaty deal. He may turn that back around, too.
Yeah.
So that and Obamacare and gay marriage and all that stuff.
He's going to try. He's going to try. That's the goal. I'll tell you what, Reggie, you got some kind of TV or something on in the background?
Let me mute it, man.
All right. Let's go mute it. I'll tell you what. That was quick. Okay. Go ahead. What else did you want to say?
Well, I mean, it's just that why do people believe what he says? I mean, why don't they just do their own research,
There is an element of the Republican Party that supports what Scott Walker says.
Right.
That has contempt for working people. That has contempt for unions and teachers and gay people and Mexicans and poor people and all the people that the Republican Party has contempt for. There are lots of people that feel that way. He's appealing to the basest instinct, the most prejudiced instinct in America. My point is that people know Donald Trump's doing it.
Right.
They don't often see it in somebody who's not as bombastic as Donald Trump. Scott Walker doesn't yell and scream and call himself the greatest thing since sliced bread the way Donald Trump does.
Right.
So Trump gets everyone knows that Donald Trump said awful things about Mexico and about Mexicans.
Right.
But they don't see it necessarily in Scott Walker. And that's why I wanted to bring up his views, because he's sort of a stealth hater rather than an open hater.
So he's like Satan in disguise as posing
in that way he's more dangerous. I mean, I still don't consider Donald Trump a serious candidate. I don't care that he's leading the Republican opinion polls. But
right.
Scott Walker is a serious candidate.
Right.
And that's why he needs to be exposed even more so.
Yeah, so do the rest of them, even Fatso, Chris Christie,
Chris Christie, I mean, he's just mean. I mean, the thing about Chris Christie, at least he wears his meanness on his sleeve.
Donald Trump.
He acts like a jerk to people. And
right.
So you can see he's a jerk because he does that.
Right.
Scott Walker doesn't. He seems like a very polite human being. Mike Huckabee, by the way, very polite. He's genial. He's nice. He makes good jokes. He seems like he'd be a pleasure to have a beer with. Very, very dangerous person.
Right.
Extremely anti-gay. Extremely anti-worker. This is a terrible human being. But he's charming. I mean, listen. How did Ronald Reagan get away with what he did for so long? He was charming.
Right.
Charm works. And Mike Huckabee and Scott Walker are charming, dangerous people. And that's why I want to expose them, because sometimes it's hard to look underneath the charm and find their positions.
Right. And like you said, Ronald Reagan was the world's greatest communicator.
Oh, yeah. No, Ronald Reagan was listen, I strongly disagree with a lot of his policies. He's one of the most anti-union presidents we've ever had. He ran the economy into the ground. But you know what? He was charming. And a great politician.
Yes, he was.
And you can't deny his political skills, even though you dislike what he stood for.
Right.
So that's my point.
Right. And why are they always attacking, like I always say before, no matter what President Barack Obama says and doesn't say or does and doesn't do, they're always going to criticize him for it either way. The man can't win for losing, right?
Well, that's for sure. I mean, look at the Affordable Care Act that they call Obamacare. That was put forward by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts. Look at cap and trade, which was put forward by the Heritage Foundation. That's to prevent climate change. Look at immigration reform, which John McCain used to support, which George W. Bush used to support. But when Obama supported it, now it's suddenly a bad thing. It's pure politics. And I want people to see through it.
Yeah, so do I. But why doesn't people bring that up as the truth?
Well, I do.
The other side does.
I bring it up, Reggie. That's why you listen to my show, right?
Yeah, Right.
There
right.
you go.
Right. But well, nobody else does.
Well, you're going to have to get more people to listen to my show. You got to get me on. Am I on the air in Georgia where you live?
You're on the air in Georgia on the internet.
Oh, just on the internet. Huh? We'll see. Yeah. Get your local radio station in Georgia. Where do you live in Georgia?
Decatur, Georgia.
Decatur. Okay. Now, Decatur's a very conservative place.
Yeah, and that's what most talk radio is nowadays, conservative.
Well, you know what? I think the people of Decatur would find it really interesting to hear someone like me because they've never heard anything like me before. And you should try to convince your local radio station to play a diverse set of opinions. If anything, I would get listeners just because my views are extremely unusual in Decatur, Georgia. And right. That's a good thing.
Right. You're not like Rush Limbaugh and the rest of them.
Not in the least. Not in the least. Hey, thanks for calling in, Reggie. I always appreciate when you do. Folks, if you want to join us, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When we come back, you can talk about Scott Walker. You can talk about Chattanooga. I want to talk about those two topics, but also Elizabeth Warren and her proposal to really crack down on the revolving door of lobbying in government. This is Mark Levine. Be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. When conservatives attack, Mark Levine is ready, Constitution in hand. And here's our favorite lawyer now.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just listen to that music a little bit. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. That just reminds me of Bill Clinton in the 90s, which seemed like a much happier time. No, we had problems, right? We did? I think we had problems in the 90s, right? Bill Clinton cheated on his wife. That was apparently the biggest problem of the 1990s. Can you imagine? We didn't have, Renegade nations. Well, I guess we did have renegade nations who could seek nuclear power in the 90s. We had North Korea. I don't remember all the gunshots. One reason we didn't have them in the 90s, by the way, is because there was an assault weapons ban in 1994. And the rifle, the weapon that was used to murder four Marines yesterday was illegal. No one could buy it in the United States until 2004 when the Republicans insisted on letting it lapse because it's not good for hunting and it's not good for self-defense because freedom! Freedom to murder! I don't know. You'll have to ask someone who supports ending the ban. Certainly I don't. We talked about Scott Walker. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I've been watching the Netroots convention, which, by the way, I've attended a couple times. Definitely worthwhile in Netroots Nation. In fact, they're doing a march right now from Netroots Nation to the sheriff of Phoenix, Arizona, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who's got a long history of really bad stuff, particularly anti-Mexican-American stuff. And so good for them for doing that. The thing I want to talk to, though, is about Elizabeth Warren, who I would argue is the only Democrat who might have had a chance to beat Hillary Clinton in the primary. Go Bernie, go. And I like Martin O'Malley too, but, you know, you're not going to come close to beating Hillary Clinton. I'm glad you're both there. I'm glad we're going to push her to do the right thing, but she's going to be the nominee. Elizabeth Warren, though, is the one person who I think could, not necessarily would, it would have been close, but would have had a chance to beat Hillary Clinton. I've been a big fan of Elizabeth Warren for a very long time. She's not only brilliant, a former Harvard professor and someone who understands financial regulation better than virtually probably any other senator, but she's also never hesitated to speak truth to power. And that's probably what I like the most about her. And she focuses on something that not enough people focus on, money in politics. And particularly right now, she spent her whole speech at Netroots talking about the revolving door between government and corporations. Because we all know how it happens. Let me tell you, as someone who's about to become a Virginia delegate, it's very clear to me that many, many people go into politics not to make lives better for people, but because when they leave politics, they can cash in as a lobbyist. And a lot of people do that. Or maybe they originally got in because they wanted to help people, but then they saw they make a lot more money as a lobbyist. And this revolving door is really dangerous because it suggests that the benefit of public service is not serving the public, but serving private interests who want to lobby the government. So Warren says, this is a direct quote from what she said to the convention, anyone who wants to be president should appoint only people who have already demonstrated they are independent, people who have demonstrated they can hold giant banks accountable, people who want to rebuild a strong middle class. It's a direct attack, really, let's face it, on Hillary Clinton. She points out that it's an attack on Obama, too, because she points out that the people who enforce the laws are the ones that matter the most. And let's face it, Barack Obama has appointed a lot of people from Wall Street. So did Bill Clinton. In some sense, it makes sense because you want someone who knows where the bodies are buried. You want someone who understands Wall Street to regulate Wall Street because it's very, very complicated. You need a very smart person to do it. You need someone who knows Wall Street well. But you also need someone who's committed to it and won't give in to help their old friends. So Elizabeth Warren has endorsed a bill that's been introduced this week by Senator Tammy Baldwin and Congressman Elijah Cummings. And the bill would prevent a lot of this revolving door in the government. It would ban these golden parachutes for government service where people can serve in the government and then go out and then lobby and so forth. It would prohibit former executive branch officials from lobbying the government. It would increase, they're already prohibited for 1 year, but increase it to 2 years. And I'd be okay with a lifetime ban, but all right, 1 year to 2 years is better than it's twice as long. It would expand, it would close loopholes, and it would require executive branch personnel to recuse themselves from any official activities that would directly benefit their former employers. Think about that. That means that if you lobby on behalf of the widget industry and you get to be powerful in government, you can't use your influence to get special tax benefits for widgets. It's actually a fairly modest proposal. And I would hope that people like Hillary Clinton would endorse it. I'm sure that Bernie Sanders will endorse it. But I'm really glad to see Elizabeth Warren pushing her principles, taking on Hillary Clinton. Even if she's not going to run for president against Hillary Clinton, she's going to challenge Hillary Clinton to fix the revolving door, challenge her to take on the powerful interests in Washington. And good for her for doing it. I'm reading now about the breaking news of the Chattanooga shooter. Apparently he purchased some of his guns illegally. We're going to have to find out exactly how he got those guns. We've got to do something about easy access to guns by people who want to shoot up military centers. Whether it's this terrorist or the Charleston terrorist, the best way to fight terrorism, I think, is to disarm them in the first place. This is Mark Levine. Have a wonderful weekend. And I'll be back, of course, on Monday, same time, same place, for more of The Inside Scoop. Follow me on Twitter @MarkLevineTalk. Post your comments at MarkLevineTalk.com.